Guitar people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with iconic songwriter, guitarist, and vocalist, Russ Ballard. In our conversation, Russ tells us about his famous Silver 68 Swiss Cheese Strat and his other guitars throughout the years, and one of Gary Moore's guitars that he owns. Russ takes us through his early bands, through Argent, and his early songwriting experiences, and tells us about what it was like touring the U.S. for the first time, and what London was like in the 60s. Russ tells us about touring at 79 and why he's not planning on stopping anytime soon, as well as the songwriting, which he doesn't plan on stopping either. Russ repeats words of wisdom his manager gave him early on that are still relevant. To find out more about Russ and to see his tour dates, check out his website, RussBallardMusic.com. That's RussBallardMusic.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players. Because you know what? They do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my buddy, Russ.
James?
Yes. How are you, Russ?
Yeah. It's good to be with you.
Likewise. Let me ask you a couple questions really quick. The Swiss cheese guitar? I know there's a story on your website, but could you give us the story of your Swiss cheese guitar?
The one with the holes in it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's that goes back to 1968 when I bought that as a black Fender Stratocaster. That's where a friend of mine was selling a black Stratocaster, and he said, "Do you want to buy it?" And I said, "Yeah, how much do you want for it?" He said, £150. This is 1968. So I bought the thing, and I already had a couple. And I asked my friend, who was a designer, basically. He was going to the Royal College of Art in London at the time, you know. And I said, "Jim, can you cut some holes in this? You know, like those." I said, "Can you cut some holes in this? Like those aluminium chairs, aluminum chairs that you cut, that had the holes cut in them, you know, and they could stack them up and they were very light. I said, can you cut some holes in it and make it look a bit different, you know, and make it look aluminium, sort of spray it silver so it looks aluminium. And I bought a couple of humbuckers from Manny's. He put one of those on. Well, he didn't do it for me. Someone else did that for me. But he changed all the pots in it, so it looked very, very different as well, you know.
Yeah.
So,
was it originally?
I said, "Well, do what you like with it."
Was it originally silver?
It was
silver?
A Strat. No. It was originally black.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you spend a lot of time? I mean, in 1968, were you in the U.S. a lot?
No, we didn't do the U.S. till 70 with Argent. I was in a band called Unit 4 Plus 2 that had a top 20 hit in America with Concrete and Clay. I play guitar on that song, and it was called Concrete and Clay. Uh-huh. And I played acoustic guitar on that, but... you know, when they asked me to join the band, which I did, and Bob Henrit, who was with me as well, we were together from when we were like 13 and 14 and 15, you know. We were the plus two. The band were called Unit 4.
Okay.
The band were just a kind of a quartet of singers. They had no guitar player, and they strummed guitars, but they wrote really good tunes, and they were... You know, they were like beautiful harmonies and stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were like the plus two. Bob and I were like plus two.
And is that where you learned your songwriting skills, was from that band, or had you already been writing songs before that?
No, I was writing songs before. I wrote a tune when I was 14.
Wow.
First time I'd ever been into it. But I had a band, you know, with Bob Henrit, my brother, and a couple of others, and... I had this tune and went into Regent Sound in London, in Denmark Street, and it was the only like professional, really, really professional demo studio. Really, that was the place everybody wanted to get into, but it was quite expensive for us. Uh-huh. I'd been into Abbey Road, believe it or not, with Norrie Paramore, with the band, and he wanted my band then. Wow. I say my band, band with my brother and Buster Meikle, a few guys.
Okay.
Together. And he said, look, when we find the right tune, you know, we give you a contract. And he was producing Cliff Richard and the Shadows.
Okay.
Before the Beatles, this was a big, big producer. George Martin was working for,
oh, wow,
for EMI at Abbey Road Studios, along with, there was Wally, John Burgess. There were about four or five big producers. George Martin wanted to be, at that time, wanted to find a good rock group, like Norrie Paramore was having hit after hit.
Sure, sure.
And George was just producing comedy things, you know. And I went into the studio with this tune that I'd written in Denmark Street, and the Shadows recorded it.
Oh, wow.
And they were the biggest thing in the country at the time.
Sure. Yeah.
They were real big, and it was on an album. And I used a D'Armond kind of early wah-wah, which was like a tone control, uh-huh, more than a wah-wah. And it changed the signal from bass, so from a bottom end bass, wah-wah-wah. It did that kind of thing, you know. Yeah, but yeah. Hank used one on the master.
That's
so great. It was great. I thought, oh, I can write tunes.
Yeah, of course.
And it was great. Great feeling.
Yeah. Early on, what kind of guitar were you playing? Early on, like in that band?
In that band, I was playing, believe it or not, I was playing, my first decent electric guitar was Hofner Club 60.
Mm-hmm.
It was Hofner Club 60 when I was 14. And when I was 14, 15, I had, the next one was a Futurama. That was a copy of a Strat, you know.
Okay.
I don't remember the Futurama, Graciasso. A Graciasso Futurama. And then my mother bought me a Stratocaster, a red Stratocaster.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Cool. Do you still have that red Strat?
No. I started part exchanging, you know. I bought a Gretsch Country Gentleman, like an orange Country Gent.
Sure.
And I chipped in my Fender Strat for the, you know, we couldn't afford to have two expensive guitars. So in those days, you would just chip in the guitar and buy another one, you know, and vice versa. You would do it again and again, then go back to a Strat, then go back to a Telecaster, that kind of thing, you know.
And what's your guitar collection look like now?
Well, I'm not a great guitar collector like a lot of people are. I have a black Strat. I have, obviously, the guitar that you know, the silver...
Yes.
Holy guitar.
Yeah.
I have a couple of Les Pauls. I have a vintage Les Paul, and I have...
Do you know what year the vintage Les Paul is?
Well, it's a 78. It's a Heritage. I bought a Heritage.
All right, very good.
In 78, which is basically a rip-off of the 52, I think it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
It is it's, you know, a fine guitar. It's a beautiful-looking guitar.
Sure.
So at the moment, I'm playing Gary Moore's guitar.
Oh, really?
Which a friend of mine bought. Yeah, he bought the guitar.
Which
and
one
I've
of,
just played it.
Which one of it, Gary's
it's
guitars?
Not, it's not the green guitar. It's the other. It's the blonde guitar. That blonde one.
Yeah, right on.
I've just been playing that one on a tour in Germany. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got back about 3 or 4 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah. What's it like touring at 79?
It's great. I mean, the audience are amazing. You know, they know all my songs.
Uh-huh.
And they're singing the songs. So, you know, get to the choruses, everybody's singing, and it's wonderful.
That's fantastic. It's
wonderful. Yeah. That's why, you know, initially when I was a kid and started to play, it was really for these moments that I'm getting now.
Yeah. Well, you wrote so many iconic songs.
Yeah, well, I guess so. And people know them, you know. So I'm saying, here's a song I wrote. I guess for the younger people, they must be thinking... I'm saying to the people in the audience, you know, here's a song your mother and father would know, and they laugh.
That's great.
And I do Since You've Been Gone, and here's a song I wrote in 19, 73. Here's a song I wrote in 1974. Here's a song I wrote in 70, which was Liar, and it goes further and further back, you know. So sure. It's a lot of fun, James.
Yeah, of course. Do you still write songs? Are you still actively writing?
Yeah, I was writing today. I was in the studio today writing. I only got back a couple of days ago, and I'm back in the studio writing. I had some good ideas on the road, so I think this sounds really strong, you know, but you always think the latest thing sounds really, really strong. But to me, it sounds really, really good.
Yeah. Back to gear. What kind of amps were you using back then, and what kind of amps are you using now?
Back then, I tell you what, I've got a good memory. I've got a good, my first amp, when I was 13, my first amp was a True Voice TV-10. That was my first amp.
Okay.
And then my amp after that was a True Voice TV-20.
Okay.
That was a 20. And then I went on, after the TV 20, I was very lucky. My mum said to me, she said, I'll treat you to a really good, you know, something for music. What would you like? An amp, a guitar, an echo chamber, or whatever, a delay. Yeah. And I had the next amp was it was a Gibson.
Okay.
G80 was it? I think it was called a G80 Varitone.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing, like a Fender, very similar finish to the Fenders at that time.
Yeah.
That has to be 1961.
Wow.
And it came over from the States, you know, and I had to wait for about 2 months before I could get. Then we had a lot of problems, like with customs, getting things through the customs from America.
Yeah.
But I got that. I had that, and then I had a Benson Echo, which was amazing. We had Vox. I turned professional in 1963.
Uh-huh.
When I was 16, we had Vox. We all used Vox, like everyone used Vox at the time.
Sure.
Then we used those Vox for about 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then we went on to Laney.
Yeah.
We had Laney drums. Laney bass. You played a Laney guitar at the time.
Wow.
Because they were, you know, we had a deal.
Sure.
Then I went on the road with Roger Daltrey. Roger Daltrey asked me to go on the road with him. And I did his first tour of America, the East Coast, his solo tour. Oh. And we did Under a Raging Moon. The album was Under a Raging Moon. But when I was playing a Gibson Les Paul there, and when we got to the sound check, it was, you know, the headstock was broken, split in two, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was dropped. I think it was dropped myself.
Sure,
I
sure.
took it out of the guitar case and it was dropped. That's what I think. But they said that they think the string should have been loosened off. Well, I've never had it before.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's an old story, that one. Anyway, Roger said to me, bless him, he said, go around to Manny's, I'll treat you to a guitar. Go and get a new guitar. I'll treat you to it. Which he did, and it was, I can't remember the name of those guitars, the flat thing without headstock, you know, those things.
Oh, yes, like a Steinberger?
A Steinberger. Yeah, I've still got it here. I've still got that one here. And, so I've had lots of in-between. I've had Telecasters, I've had Gretsch, I've had a few different Gretsch guitars. I wish I had them now, actually.
My first exposure to you is probably when Argent played on the Midnight Special I can't remember if it was 73 or 74. But and you, there you
yeah,
were.
I think I'm seeing it. Yeah.
You were using the silver guitar, and you were. I think
the silver guitar. Yeah.
And you had two full stacks, and I'm not sure if the label was covered up, but I'm pretty sure they were Marshalls. I'm not sure.
Yeah. They probably were Marshalls. We were using Marshalls after that, but they probably were Marshalls.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that very well.
Let me ask you this. What was London like in the mid and late 60s?
Well, it was amazing. You know, that whole thing, I know that was, you know, my time. And it's a time for everybody of my age at that time, the 60s. there you had the London scene going on. It was Swing in London. I think the press called it Swing in London. you had the Mersey Beat thing going on. You had this. Well, we always had lots of bands, lots of groups in the UK. So it was really, really happening big time. You know,
sure.
The blues thing was happening. The bands were, you know, sort of taking your music in the States and sending it back to you. You know,
yeah.
Which was great. You know, and it was such a great time. It was, you know, then we went to the States as Argent in March 1970. It's so exciting, the whole thing, you know. It's overwhelming, really, James, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was really overwhelming at the time.
Did the US live up to what your expectations were?
Yeah, yeah. It was like, for me, it was like living in a television set. It was like hearing the accents everywhere, like when you hear us and we hear you. It was like, because we had so many, everything was American, you know, color TV was years ahead of us, and but we still got all those... I Love Lucy programs and a lot of that stuff, and Dragnet and those kind of things. But you probably got them in color. We got them in black and white. Yeah. So it was great.
And did you spend any time in LA and Hollywood and all that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I went over there myself. We did all the gigs. We did the Whiskey.
Oh, wow.
We did, you know, we're doing those sort of venues, the Palladium and whatever. We did on the East Coast. We did about three times. We did the one in New York. It was Academy of Music.
Okay, sure.
We did that three times. One of those times was with Kiss. Fun enough, we did that.
Oh, really?
Years when they were just started. Yeah, yeah. I'd never heard of them. We went to their sound check, actually. We were there when they were sound checking, and they had this rostrum that was sort of moving about and stuff, and I thought, this looks interesting, you know. But they looked normal, and it wasn't until the evening when they stood in the wings with all their schlapp on, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, wow. They were about seven and a half feet high, you know.
Yeah. And have you spoken
to them? It looked very effective.
Have you spoken to them since?
No, yeah, I've never spoken to the guys.
Since they covered your song and changed the lyrics.
They've covered a few of my songs in the band, you know. But funnily enough, we've never chatted. I've been in Gene's company once or twice, but we never even spoke, not even then, you know. I would have spoken, but I don't know. It's a strange thing. Now we would just laugh at it, wouldn't we? We would just laugh. Now, we play St. Louis with them as well.
Okay. And so now, apart from your songwriting and your work and touring, what do you do for, you know, to pass the time?
I'm in the studio all the time, James.
Are
I'm
you
just
really?
Still working. And, you know, I've never stopped working. I've just got back from Germany. Just done a three-week German tour into Switzerland and Bavaria. It's amazing. The audience are just crazy.
Sure.
I mean, it's just amazing. So, but it's what it's the reason I got into a band when I was very young.
Yeah.
Just to do what I'm doing now, you know, just the same. And it keeps you young, James.
Yes. Well, obviously. Look at you. You look great.
Yeah, I feel good. I feel really good. I run every day. I'm fit.
Very good.
I watch my diet. I'm vegan.
Okay.
And I have a trainer.
Wow.
Which I've had for years. I've had a trainer for 17, 18 years.
Wow.
So,
that's great.
I'm very, very lucky, yeah.
Well, and the only reason I brought that up was because I see this beautiful garden out the window behind you.
Yeah, that all comes from songwriting.
Oh, very good. And are you set financially? Like, you don't have to, if you stopped working, would you be set financially?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, but I don't want to stop. You know?
No, no, no.
They used to say, you know, when I was young, I never realized I just wanted to write tunes, you know, like I love doing it, love producing, I love the whole music game. But somebody said to me years ago, you know, Russ, you know that songwriting is the real estate of the music industry.
Who was that said that to you?
It was Mel Collins, my manager. He was about 16, 17 years older than me, you know, but he knew a lot about the music industry.
Sure.
I think he'd managed Tom Jones once and a few other bands that were really good. And he said that we became really good friends. He's no longer with us, but he was a very good friend.
Sure.
And that's one of the first things he said to me.
It's very smart advice.
Yeah, yeah. Not the same now, Jane. It's not the same now. It's not the real estate. It's not the real estate of the music industry anymore.
Well, the people are coming. People go to shows to hear the songs they love. So it still is. There's still a little.
Yeah, exactly.
But any plans to come to the U.S. and tour again?
I would love to. If somebody wants to ask me to come in and pay for it, it would be really good. You know.
Okay. Well, hopefully somebody
really
does.
Good. Who knows? You know.
Yeah.
I've got a great band. I've got an amazing band. Amazing band. You know, and they've been around. And yeah, we rock.
Yeah.
We really do rock. And. I would love to come. I'd love to come to the States and and see what happens.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And when you tour, say when you tour in other, like, you know, in other continents, do you, like Japan, do you use a different band or do you take the same band?
I took the same band to Japan. We go to a regular gig. I say a regular gig. It's regular because it's once every 18 months, I guess. But
okay.
It's a guy loves us. And we go to Lisbon,
uh-huh.
We go to that area, you know,
yeah.
Portugal, and play it. We play at a beautiful venue. The venue is I can't remember what it's called, but it is it's gambling and stuff. I can't remember the town, but it's a casino anyway,
uh-huh.
With the most incredible, the biggest casino in Europe.
Wow.
And we play there a lot, you know, and
yeah.
It's usually sort of like 2,000-3,000 people. It's
sure.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, Russ, it's been wonderful talking to you. I really appreciate your time.
And you, James. It's great to meet you at long last.
Yeah. And I hope I hope to meet you in person, and I hope that you play here in the U.S. so I can hear your songs.
That would be really, really cool, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, because those are the songs I grew up on, and I have great fondness for them.
I'm sure you did.
Well,
wow, that's great.
Thank you, Russ.
Thanks a lot, James. God bless you.
And likewise. And have a great day or evening.
And you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.